Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chantilly Kia. Let's ride together.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.
All right, thank you for listening. It is now week two of Redskins Talk, the podcast. JP Finley is here with Rich Tandler. We anchor all of your content for CSM Mid-Atlantic around the Redskins, and it has been a heck of a week for content after a blowout loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tandler, I think it's time that we just focus on the Cowboys because the Steelers game was such a mess. But give me the two things I want to hit on from the Steelers game for both of us. What is fixable from that game, and what is unfixable from that game?
I think, just going really with one of each, I would say that Kirk Cousins' kind of subpar play is fixable. I think, you had a good article this morning other teams may have something of a blueprint. I think Jay Gruden is smart enough to adjust and fix those things that other teams are now set up for. Unfixable, I think, is the defensive line and then slash rushing defense. I think their main rushing defense is going to be to put up enough points to where the other team can't run the ball. I mean, I just don't see. I think they can improve some. I don't think they're going to have 33-year-old running backs putting up, a buck and a quarter against them every week. But I think, that's not something that's going to turn around in a major way.
A buck and two quarters, I'll add. But, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I tweeted out the story, if the Steelers defense gave opposing defenses a blueprint to stop the Redskins offense or at least slow it way down. And you know how the Twitterati work. A bunch of folks are saying like, oh, I told you so, Kirk can't do it. I absolutely think Kirk can do it. He just didn't in that first game. I think they're going to see soft zone because it worked. So what do? They need to commit to running the ball more. I think they need to move Kirk around more, get him on those bootlegs that he likes to run, and even just some draw plays. If they're gonna drop linebackers at the snap of the ball and they're only gonna rush three, you run a couple draw plays to a fast guy like Chris Thompson, that's gonna get those linebackers a lot closer to the line of scrimmage pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think one more thing real quick and then we'll move on. I think you need to attack the zone more also. You've got these receivers, you've got an accurate quarterback. Let them find some creases, try to go over the top of it, whatever you need to do. But you can't just say they're not going to make a living just dumping it off underneath the defense. Take what they'll give them. I think sometimes they need to go out and take what they want.
Right. A 7-yard out, you can only gain so many yards before you run out of space. That said, it's starting to make me like Dustin Hopkins in fantasy a lot more. There's going to be a lot of field goals if they don't figure out how to stop these zones because he put up 330 passing yards. They moved the ball. They just got bogged down inside the 30.
Yep.
All right. Dallas week is here. It almost seems a bit too sudden, week two, after the late game Monday night. But like it or not, Dallas week is here. I think, obviously, stopping the run is going to be paramount against the Cowboys. Frankly, I'm not sure that they can do it against that offensive line. I think Ezekiel Elliott is in line for a better game this week than he had last week. And I think our old friend Alfred Morris is going to be very scary. Later in the podcast, we're going to talk with the guy that runs Blogging the Boys, which is the Cowboys SB Nation website. But, Rich, let's not focus so much on what Dallas can do to the Skins. What can the Skins do to Dallas? How should they come out and attack the Cowboys on Sunday?
Well, you know, the Dallas defense, although they did do a pretty good job against Eli, you know, what they give up, 20 points, I think 73 yards on the ground. Eli went for a couple hundred yards. Odell Beckham, I think 4 catches for 73 yards. They didn't do a bad job.
But the one thing I'll add there about the Dallas D is that I believe every time the Giants' offense got into the red zone, they scored. And I think the Cowboys like to kind of go for a bend, don't break, and they'll give you some yards, but they're going to keep you out of the end zone. Eli found the end zone. I think he found Cruz. I think he found Larry Donnell.
They only got 2 touchdowns, though, so it wasn't really that. So they didn't break all that much.
They were 2 for 2 then inside the red zone.
Right.
I'm saying if the Skins could have done one thing differently Monday against the Steelers, it would have been score rather than give up field goals. If those first 2 field goals, when they get up 6-0, if they could have converted a touchdown out of one of those drives, that's an entirely different game.
Right. And gone for it on 4th-and-1, first drive. But we've got Steelers in the rearview mirror, so let's move to.
You're right.
We're talking Cowboys here. But, I think the Dallas team, they still don't really have anybody who can rush the passer. Although they did sign a pass rusher earlier this week, guy who has 11 career sacks who was cut by the Jaguars. His name escapes me at the moment.
Well, he's probably not going to have that much of an impact on the game, let's be honest.
Right, exactly.
Well, speaking of, that's
a sign that they need some pass rush.
Yeah. Speaking of guys that just got signed, what do you think Colin Jenkins' impact will be?
Not big. You know, the guy is more. He's
a run stopper,
employed.
Right?
No, he's employed because he can rush the passer. Okay. That's really more his thing. Not that he can't stop the run. Not that he's not capable of doing that. But, you know, he's really in there for pass rush purposes. But, you know, I just think they wanted a 7th defensive lineman. And then we'll see how the rotation works out.
I think Cullen Jenkins plays this Sunday. I don't think he's inactive. Do you?
I think he definitely plays. I think, you know, he showed, I mean, he stepped in here, you know, a couple of days later. Now that the Bucks preseason game did not have a whole lot of game planning going on or any intricate defenses or anything like that. But, I think he showed he can step up and play. I certainly expect him to be active and play, you know, maybe a couple of dozen snaps.
So we can agree then that the real reason they cut him was just a salary cap maneuver, just so they didn't have to guarantee the whole year's money?
Yeah. You know, if they're in a position where they wanted, they found a better option maybe, on the street at some point during the season, they want to be able to move on from him and not have to pay his full season salary.
If he plays well against Dallas and shows that he's an impact player on that defensive line, which may be a stretch, but it might not. Who knows? Are they going to kick themselves for kind of going arguably the cheap route or the smart route, whatever you want to say?
I don't know. I don't know what he could have done against the Steelers. It seemed like the Steelers could do pretty much anything that they wanted to when they wanted to do it. If Colin Jenkins is the difference between winning and losing a game they lost by 22 points, I just don't see it.
So you're saying Colin Jenkins, what is it, his VORP or his WARP is not 22 points?
Are you talking Madden? Because I don't understand Madden.
No, I was talking baseball.
Oh, yes. Win against replacement.
Yeah, it's win over replacement player, right? You're right.
Okay.
Either way,
it's not 22 points.
Right, exactly. All right, let's talk specific to the Cowboys, but we'll kind of bring it back to what was a very hot topic. Bashaud Breeland was matched up against Antonio Brown probably too often Monday night. The safety help wasn't there fast enough or enough, period. Dez Bryant comes to town Sunday. Now, it's important, I think, to point out that Dez is a different receiver than Antonio Brown. For starters, he's not as good, but he also kind of plays exclusively on the outside, whereas Antonio Brown is being moved around almost constantly, will line up in the slot some. Lots of different formations for the Steelers with Antonio Brown. Not quite so much with the Cowboys and Dez. All of that said, will they make an effort to match Josh Norman on Dez Bryant more in this game, or will they stick to kind of the plan we saw Monday night?
I think they stick to the plan, and I think we've seen Bashaud Breeland play pretty well against Dez. Yes, Dez has had his moments against Breeland in their, they've met, I guess, four times now. And Breeland has been, you know, primarily the guy who was on him.
Dez wasn't playing last year. They probably met three times, right?
That's correct. No, he played. No, I believe he played in both games. He was on the field.
I thought he was hurt late last year. But it's irrelevant. Yeah. But yes, yeah. Breeland has played well against Dez.
Right. So, you know, I think they'll go with the same thing. I think, you know, the important thing here is they have three new players in that secondary, in Bruton, Hall changing positions of safety, and Norman. What Joe Barry pointed out last week was, if you have a cornerback traveling with a receiver, it's fine for the guy who's traveling. He understands what he has to do, but you get those the other three guys have got to get, you know, have got to quickly pick up what they have to do. They're adjusting. They have to communicate it. You're creating more potential for confusion than you might be gaining by maybe having the better corner on their best receiver. So I think until everybody gets uncomfortable there, I think they're going to stick with sides.
You know what else would help a lot? Some damn pass rush. I mean, it was crazy watching. Now, I recognize that Roethlisberger is a tough guy to bring down, but in the second half of that game, they really did not generate much pass rush. And, you know, for a guy that looked as good as anybody in the preseason and in Richmond and throughout training camp, Preston Smith did not do a heck of a lot Monday night.
Yeah, had a few pressures on him. I think he had his arms around him once, but he tried to go at him, go at him a little too high, and just, you know, he couldn't drag him down, and Ben just kind of stepped away a little bit and completed the pass. So, but that's right. You know, I don't know if Dak Prescott is going to be quite that slippery, and he's probably a little bit easier to bring down.
But he can move. I wonder if Barry will get a little more aggressive against a rookie quarterback, and even if it's not blitzing guys, but just trying to disguise stuff more and see if they can't confuse the young guy. Dak looked pretty good, I thought, in their game against the Giants. I saw probably the whole second half, and, you know, he didn't make a ton of plays, but he didn't make mistakes either, and oftentimes you see rookies make mistakes.
Yeah, well, 45 passes, he wasn't sacked, he didn't throw an interception. I think you should, you know, give him, certainly gets kudos for that. But, you know, did he really do anything, you know, for the Cowboys to win, especially, you know, what I'm going to do if I'm Joe Barry is I'm going to, you know, get David Bruton up in the box, stack it up, not let the running game, Ezekiel and Alfred, beat me and say, hey, Dak, if you can beat me, go right ahead.
Although I tell you what, if Terrence Williams runs out of bounds instead of cuts in back into the field, we'd be having a different conversation. If the vibe coming out of Dallas was a Dak engineered the last minute drive to get the win over the Giants, the hype train on that dude would be going like it was in the preseason.
It would be of Carson Wentz proportions.
Wentz looked pretty good though, man. I mean, can we do something
Browns,
real quick about RG3?
It was against the Browns.
Are we allowed to talk about RG3, or have you embargoed that?
You know what? You're going to make half the listeners mad, and half will be fine. So let's go.
You know what, man? That guy, it's so hard to believe, and yet it is so, it's so obvious for him to get hurt again, and on that kind of play where he's trying to probably do a little bit too much, and you just wonder if it ever, I will confidently say it will never get back to 2012 levels again, but I don't know that guy ever starts another NFL season for, certainly for 16 games, if not one game.
Yeah. Well, just real quick, from the moment he cut back into the field, into the land of Haloti-Ngata against the Ravens, I knew he would have trouble staying healthy his whole career. But nobody's going to give him a contract to pay him. Like, what did he make, $6.7 million this year for the with the Browns, I believe.
And that was the only deal he got. That was the only offer he had.
Right. Yeah, they're kind of bidding against themselves, shades of old Redskins. you're not going to bring him in and say, hey, he's our starter. Run through the whole off-season program with him. You know, give him all those first-team snaps only to see this happen. If any other GM/coach does that, they deserve whatever scorn that might be heaped on them when he gets hurt.
All right, let's do one more, and this is a good old speculative hypothetical. If the Skins were to add, if they're able to add one guy, and it's either a running back or a pass rusher, somebody that's not in the building, what would you rather get?
Pass rusher. Pass rushers are much more valuable than running backs are, and let's give Matt Jones more than what do you have, 6-7 carries?
7 carries
let's
for
give
24
him
yards.
A little bit more than that, and maybe a little bit better blocking in front of him before we throw him overboard or make him take a back seat to a C.J. Spiller or a Ray Rice or any of the other names that are getting thrown out there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think one way to really stop the soft zone that the Steelers showed, run the ball more effectively, because then those linebackers can't drop back so far.
Yeah, exactly. And then, hey, while they're at it, play a little better defense, keep them in the game, and then that way you can actually run the ball instead of having to throw out of in catch-up mode.
Right on. All right, Rich, thank you very much. I will see you at the park. Next guest, I really want to thank Grant Paulson for coming on Redskins Talk the podcast. Grant is a great dude, an even better radio host, and I believe the guy that broke Kirk Cousins signing his franchise tag. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that happened, of course, during spring training. I was actually in Vieira at Nats spring training watching some baseball when it all kind of went down, but he's got to start playing good football and get paid or else
yeah.
We'll see at the end of this season what the Redskins decide.
Yeah, that's going to be super interesting, and you and I were there Monday night watching that game against the Steelers, watching that butt-kicking, honestly. We'll start there with Kirk. What'd you think of his performance? I thought it was pretty interesting and maybe telling that the Steelers went all zone against him and kind of wanted to force him to find the weaknesses.
Yeah, it's not what we were accustomed to, certainly at the end of last season. If you go back to the end of the 2015 postseason run for the Redskins when they ripped off the 4 straight wins in December. I mean, he lit it up. He was throwing for well over 300 yards and a bunch of touchdowns and no picks, and everything came easy against some bad defenses. What I saw, again, Monday night against the Steelers was, you said zone, that's right, you said they dropped. They basically let him take what was given underneath. They didn't let him do anything vertically down the field. They didn't want to be beaten in the intermediate game to Pierre Garçon and Jordan Reed on some of those deep dig routes and things where they're picking up 18, 19 yards at
those
a time.
Those crossing routes think, they love, you know?
Absolutely. And Cousins is going to have to make some adjustments. The Packers in the playoffs.
They showed that formula.
Yes, and I think that carries over, JP, at this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see that kind of week in, week out until the Skins and Cousins can figure something out. And that said, I think the Redskins offensive staff, from especially Gruden and Sean McVay, are smart and savvy enough to get in the film room and figure some stuff out. But it's also, the thing with Kirk is he's a methodical, efficient dude. He doesn't want to turn the ball over. And so it may require him throwing into some tighter windows And where I thought Kirk looked great last night, and you and I talked about this a lot on the radio and not, just talking, is he's so good in the no huddle when they go up tempo. And he looked great in it last night. The best pass I think he threw all night was the, I think it was a, call it like an 18-yard in to Crowder, where he released that ball before Crowder even made his cut. It was just a really crisp pass and catch. I think they should do more of that for Cousins in the offense.
Completely agree. Maybe the throw right before that was the second pass, which was a deep out toward the sideline of Pierre Garçon. But yeah, I'm with you. Just get him in, well, get the offense going. Tempo, as you pointed out. There's so many guys to get the football, and what they did there was they caught the personnel grouping that wasn't beneficial to Pittsburgh, and they weren't able to sub and get off the field. And Cousins, who I talked to today about that, said that was kind of the game plan. That's what they want to do as the season goes along. That's when they're at the best. Is, you know, he's got to be the trigger man, get the ball out quick, spread it around. He's got great weapons around him. His philosophy is you can't go broke taking a profit, so he's going to dink and dunk until he can hit that one or two big plays and a half that's going to put the team over the top. But the other thing that I talked to him about, you know, that you'll find interesting is he was referencing the fact that he didn't get sacked in 43 pass attempts. And everyone loves that number because he's so quick to throw the football and he doesn't take hits, which is unlike Colt McCoy on the roster and Robert Griffin who started previously.
Certainly.
And he pointed out, maybe I need to trade in a sack or two. Maybe it's okay. 43 dropbacks and throws with no sacks is probably extreme and not okay. It means that I didn't do enough off script. I didn't move around in the pocket. I didn't scramble enough to extend plays. I think you'll see more of that as the year goes along, as he gets more comfortable, because he knows
he's going to
just kind of be an athlete and play football.
Absolutely. I mean, there were a couple of plays. I remember the one late in the second half when he threw the ball away, basically, and it looked like he had a solid 7-yard gain if he just ran. And he's shown that he has some wheels. He has some speed. Last year he scored a bunch of rushing touchdowns. I mean, he has enough football instinct to make those plays. It wouldn't shock me if he's a little tight week one and then they get down in a hole and he's trying to really make sure he's not forcing anything to make the hole any worse. But you and I are both believers in Kirk Cousins. I think he is certainly a capable NFL passer. I think he's a top 15 type guy. I think he's a guy that can become a Matt Ryan. I mean, he's not Aaron Rodgers or even maybe the high ceiling like a Derek Carr has shown at times, but Kirk Cousins is a quarterback that can win you games in January. It's just a matter of getting him there. I still truly believe that.
Yeah, I do too, and I think rightfully or wrongfully, whether you like the guy or you don't like the guy, and I don't mean Cousins as much as any quarterback in the league, there's no reason to make any grand decisions or make any big opinions on four quarters of football. And the fact is, there's some good teams around the league like Seattle that didn't look good on both offense and defense. And there's units that struggled that are going to be great this season. There's a lot of problems in Washington on that defensive side of the ball. They couldn't stop the run. They didn't get pass rush. I think are more sustainably bad than their quarterback position, which I think is going to be fine as the year goes along.
Absolutely. And I mean, if the Skins could have scored early in that game, if they get 7 on one of those field goal drives, it's an entirely different game. I mean, I think that's where the Steelers going.
What'd you think of not going for the 4th and 1 and then going for the 4th and 6 shortly thereafter?
So one of the things I hate the most, especially in football, is when coaches are reactionary. You need to force the issue at all times rather than react to what has happened and what your opposition is doing. And by not going for it on that 4th and 1, you were playing very conservatively, which I disagree with first off, because that's the prime position to establish yourself as the dominant force in the game. But I almost have more of a problem with going for it on the 4th and 6, because clearly you're just reacting. The Steelers at that point have scored the touchdown on the fourth on their own 4th and 1, the pass to Antonio Brown, and you're starting. It gave the game a sense of desperation way before it needed a sense of desperation.
Completely agree. Here's one thing nobody really talked about in a few days since the game. They had that 4th and 1. They elect to obviously punt, and I disagree that they should have, you know, done that. I mean, I'm with you. I think you go for that. But what's their 4th and 1 bread and butter go-to play? That they're not very good in the running game in short yardage. And in goal to go, which is no different, they've really struggled dating back to last season. If you remember, their most successful play last year was
QB draw out of the shotgun. QB draw out of the shotgun?
Exactly. Spread gun. Or if they were going to do a traditional under center carry, it was to their fullback, Darrell Young. Well, this is something no one's talking about, but he's not on the roster.
Right.
And without him, they don't have anybody who plays fullback who gets carries. I mean, Miles Paul's a tight end playing fullback. They didn't really use him in that regard last night. So you're either then using a one-back set where Matt Jones is coming downhill, and I don't think they had any confidence in that, or you're throwing the football there where Cousins wasn't particularly accurate at that point in the game, and they'd already had a couple of drops as well. So I'm just, my opinion is, thinking out loud, but I think that they probably weren't confident in anything they had at that moment. I still want to see Jay Gruden use some stones there and keep his offense on the field. Fourth and six, I liked in that no man's territory. Well, but that's a much longer and lower percentage down in distance.
Well, and Jay said today on the conference call that he loved the play call they had for that fourth and five. So I believe him there. And then the play was not designed to go to Chris Thompson short of the sticks. You know, there's no way that's what they were supposed to do there. But the one thing I saw a bunch of in Richmond, and I wonder if it's just they were going through their route tree, but Kirk and Jordan Reed would do, after practice, they would go 20 minutes just throwing fades into the end zone. And that is, I don't love the fade route, but I would love Jordan Reed maybe matched up against a slot corner or a linebacker when they're like on that 2-3 yard line. Give him a shot every time, because that's a guy that can win one-on-ones.
Well, and as low a percentage throw as that seems to be with undersized wide receivers as well, it's something that Kirk Cousins throws really well. I mean, it's one of, I think, the better routes and plays in the playbook last season. If you go back, remember how many times he hooked up with Pierre Garçon, who's only 6 foot in that regard as well. I just think he throws a beautiful ball to the corner of the end zone. And Jordan Reed, who plays basketball, literally, just out jumps people and posts up and boxes people out, he caught a couple of those last year as well. I'm with you. There's a lot in the passing game I like. Jamison Crowder was an unsung hero on Monday night. He was terrific, caught 6 balls. DeSean Jackson went over 100 yards. You got to go 10 weeks into the season or something like that last year before that happened. So there were some, while it was ugly, there were some things that happened that give you some hope moving forward. But again, I think that the focus at Redskins Park this week shouldn't necessarily be on the fact that they didn't throw the ball well enough or Cousins didn't play well enough to win, which are fair assessments. But the sustainably awful things that happened are, I didn't know all offseason why they didn't upgrade their defensive line and how they were going to stop the run.
Dude, I
couldn't
figure
all offseason how they were going to get to the quarterback.
Totally.
And I still don't know how either of those things are going to be answered.
Free agency, the draft, all of these periods where people are like, okay, you can't stop the run, you got to do something. Can't stop the run, you got to do something. They really did nothing. I thought,
who's their upgrade on the D-line? Is it Kendall Reyes? They bring in Hood, who had a great camp, but he was signed during the Super Bowl week as just a guy.
I told you.
Up being better than that. But who did they bring in that's actually an upgrade?
I don't know, frankly. I think Cullen Jenkins might be their upgrade, and that's a guy they didn't keep on the week one roster because they didn't want to guarantee his salary. You know, I mean, it's a unique situation what they're doing at the D-line, and I think you got to think the thought process was, hey, we're going to score a bunch, so people are going to have to throw it on us, and they're not going to be able to ground and pound. But in this league, a good running back can slice you up pretty quick, and you don't have to throw the ball. I got to ask you something weird. I called your cell phone and you have classical music playing. Is that a bit? Is that your thing? What the heck's going on there?
It started as a bit and now it's become just a strange thing that I don't want to change. So when ringback tones were a thing, I used to rotate.
What were some of your songs?
I would go Fat Bottom Girls by Queen. I had a lot of Kanye West, Can't Tell Me Nothing. I mean, it was always, like, once a month or so, I would change my ringback tone.
Right.
But what happened was, after several months, if you stop making those adjustments on your phone bill, if you don't ever take it off, it just becomes classical music like you hear at some doctor's office.
Right.
And so many people commented on it right away that I thought, I don't want it to go back to just sounding like it's ringing when someone's calling me. I want to keep classical music like you're on hold calling for an appointment
it
and
is.
Some like specialist. Yeah, so I figured why not. And it's actually a good talking point because I would say still in about a 35% or 40% of my conversations, they start with me telling this story about how and why my phone makes that sound.
I thought for a second I was about to meet Grant Paulson's handler and that I didn't get like a direct line to you and that I had to like talk to somebody and say a password or something.
I've actually, that would be funny. I've never tried that. If my girlfriend answers, and then she's at like a switchboard. Mr. Paulson's office, what can we do for? Yeah, I just don't get enough calls. I'm not cool enough for that. It's like my mom, one of my brothers who likes to talk about football. The other one likes Star Wars and never calls me.
He can call Deuce.
I think you were the first person to call in like 3 days.
I don't get a lot of calls now anymore. I mean, you get calls on the TV side. TV is like in the Stone Ages, man. All they work with is paper. There's more paper used in making television. It's unbelievable. And phone calls. Like, nobody wants to deal with email, which could eliminate both of those things. But
that's true. The other thing that they do in TV, radio does this a little bit, but the very tiny bit of TV I've done, what I've noticed is, they love meetings, and they hate conference calls.
So many meetings, dude. Oh, my God, meetings.
What is that? I mean, but it's not like everyone's just calling in at 3:30 at a convenient time, and everyone's at their desk. There's so much sitting around tables and discussing things that could be discussed on the phone. I'll drive occasionally into a station at 35 or 40 minutes in traffic to sit there for 10 minutes talking about something that could have been a text message. And this is constant.
Dude, you know how football coaches come into a new place and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna create a new culture." There is a meeting culture in television, and it's highly annoying. I hope none of my bosses are offended by that. I doubt they're listening, frankly, but if they are, I love the meetings with you, bosses. It's just all those other meetings.
Right, the other ones that you guys aren't involved in. No, honestly, I think it's okay if they hear it because it needs to be said. Someone needs to say this.
It does.
Everything can be solved with text messages, email chains, and conference calls at this point. There's just no reason to get a bunch of people sitting in a room.
While we're talking about what grinds our gears, I also hate voicemail. Like, it's one thing if you call, but leaving a message, unless it's the doctor's office confirming your appointment or something, just shoot me a text, man.
Does your mom leave you voicemail?
Absolutely.
Yes. See, that's, to me, I think that's the one thing that still happens is moms are famous for, and this is how mine goes. It's never actually anything important. It's, "Hey, Grant, it's mom. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
Right.
Thanks, bye." That's it. So it takes longer to get to the voicemail than to actually listen to that.
And they just don't realize that, "Hey, I know you called. I see the missed call. I'll call you back."
Right. Yeah. I got that little red X next to your name. I'm going to give you a shout back in the near future.
All right. We have clearly derailed from football while we complain about work. Tell the good people where you're headed, and I'm curious how many plates you're going to try to put down.
Fogo de Chão is the answer to that question. This is a Brazilian steakhouse. I am going to leave my coaster green the entire time. So
that
what they do is they give you, essentially, it's a green and red half and half coaster where if you're green, they bring you meat. If you go red, they stop bringing you meat. Well, what I did last time was I would go green until I got the cut I wanted, then flip red, and I thought I was going to be able to eat more. The plan tonight is actually to try to minimize the sides, stay green as long as possible, get as much meat on my plate as I can, and basically eat until I'm full rather than trying to just time it out slowly, because when I was methodical, you know, 13, 14 play drives are tough. Running the football is not easy in this league. When I tried to slow my roll, I got full faster because I feel like the number of minutes you're eating is more important than, like, what you're actually eating. So that's the game plan tonight. I'll tell you how it works out.
You know, you got to run the numbers. It's your bites per chew ratio, man.
Right, exactly.
Well, and the thing that gets me when I go there is the salad bar, because I love all those, like, Italian cold cuts they have up there. But, you know, you're watering down the main course, which is all that meat on a stick.
100% true. Well, what they do, though, is they make their sides really good. They also serve them to you well before they actually come around with the meats, because they want you to fill up.
Because
for them, that's the cheap stuff. Like, if you're eating their meat, that's not ideal. So I'm a sucker for mashed potatoes, bread, anything like that, and that's what they're trying to shovel down my gullet.
Yeah.
So essentially, they're just, like, flaunting your favorite things in front of you and daring you not to eat it. But I've been around the block.
They run a good ship at Fogo. All right, man. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed this. Thank you very much for coming on. I will tweet this at you, and you can send it to your millions of followers.
I don't know about that, but appreciate it. It's always good catching up, buddy.
All right, now we want to thank Dave Halperin from Blogging the Boys for joining us. Dave runs Blogging the Boys, which is the SB Nation Cowboys site, which does a bajillion web traffic every day. That's a very official number. But I've looked at the stuff you guys post, and the amount of comments and tweets and stuff surrounding that is pretty incredible. You guys run a heck of a website.
Well, I really appreciate it, man. I got a really great team that works with me over there, so I want to give a lot of credit to those guys who help out with the site every day.
All right, well, now you've plugged your guys. Now you got to tell me what the Skins should expect Sunday. It is Dallas week after a ruthless butt-whooping from the Steelers Monday night. The Skins are almost in a must-win situation. Not quite, because it's week two, and it'd be absurd to call something must-win in week two. But the Cowboys lost to the Giants at home, so I wonder how's the feeling down in Big D?
Well, I think people were pretty frustrated by that loss. I think that going in, even though, you know, we were with the rookie quarterback and we had the rookie running back, so things were definitely going to be a little bit different, I think there was a lot of confidence that the Cowboys could pull out a win. And then to lose, but to lose kind of the way they did, at the end where they thought they might get that final chance of a kick to win the game and they didn't get it, I think that left a lot of people, it was almost like a real gut punch there.
What a bonehead play by Terrence Williams. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine. I mean, he tried to, in some respect, he took ownership of it and said, yeah, I just got another situation, I got to do better. And then he tried to explain what he was trying to do, and it was all just a mess. I mean, if he had just got out of bounds, Dan Bailey is about best kicker there is in the NFL.
Yeah, that guy's got a boot on him.
50-50 chance he hit something from 63 yards out, you know, so they had to get him that chance.
Dave, 50-50 chance he hit something from 63, that sounds a little optimistic.
you see the one he kicked from 56?
Yeah,
earlier in the game?
He's got a big leg. All right.
He cleared that one by about 10-15 yards.
All right, fair enough. All right, but let's look at the matchup this Sunday. What do Skins fans need to know about Dak? I didn't get to watch the whole game, but I watched a good chunk of it. I thought Dak Prescott as a rookie was pretty good. I don't know that he was awesome like he was in the preseason. What was your read on the QB?
He was okay.
Okay.
He did enough, I think, that if the rest of the Cowboys would have played up to the level they could have, that they would have won that game. I mean, he had some passes. Cole Beasley early on in the game dropped one right at the goal line that could have been an easy touchdown. That really hurt. Dez, tougher catch in the corner of the end zone, didn't come down with it. You know, so there were a couple of passes there that could have been touchdowns that really would have changed the complexion of the game.
Was that beep on purpose? Was that you, like, doing a Dez Bryant routine where you were screaming curse words so you had to beep it out?
I don't know. Maybe that was my wife trying to call in or something. I don't know.
Does Dez just scream about every catch? It kind of seems like that's his deal. If he thinks he's even close, he's going to go nuts on the sideline.
Yeah, he's a little bit passionate there. You know, that's a no-brainer that Dez is going to scream once or twice a game. It's just kind of like just something you get used to.
Yeah, right. So, sun comes up, sun goes down.
But the Prescott, he looked okay. I mean, he got a little bit wild in the second half. The passes got a little bit off target in the second half. So that was kind of a concern. But the big problem was they had drop passes, and then they could not get the running game going at all. And that's
the strength of the offense, right? I mean, that's what you guys want to hang your cowboy hats on.
Yeah, so that was, I think that's the thing that kind of came out of the game after looking back going, just, wow, how did that happen? That was shocking. And I actually wrote an article about how that happened today.
So, all right, give us the 30-second version of that.
Well, I think one thing, the Giants defensive line is much improved. They spent a lot of money.
They did. They spent a lot of cash.
A lot of cash, and it worked. They looked a heck of a lot better. They looked very strong in the middle with Harrison and Hankins. So, you know, that's a hard place to get yardage.
But still, you got Ezekiel Elliott in that offensive line. What did you think of Zeke, of the rookie running back? I didn't think he was particularly impressive.
Well, I think what happened was, I mean, the blocking wasn't good, so you know, we can say that for Zeke. But I think Zeke was a little bit too hyped up in his debut, because I wrote about in the article, he wasn't being patient. He was ramming into the holes, whether they were there or not, and just trying to bust through. If he would have slowed down in the backfield just a bit, pressed the hole, made some cuts, you know, looked around with a little bit of vision, there were some things there that he could have picked up on. I think he was just a little bit hyped up, a little bit aggressive in his debut, and I think that going forward, he'll do a much better job of having that, you know, just that half second of patience you need sometimes for the hole to develop.
Well, and Alfred Morris looked pretty good.
Well, that's Alfred Morris. I mean, I pointed out there was a play where he actually almost stopped behind two Cowboys players who were blocking to wait to see which way the hole was going to develop. And when it developed, he shot right through it, and the Cowboys had like a 13-yard gain. That's the kind of subtle differences that a veteran and a rookie, you know, that you'll get out there on the field.
Well, and Alfred's always been a smart player. You know, his numbers kind of were on the decline here in D.C., but that may have been as much of a change in schemes and stuff as it was anything. One thing I found kind of interesting, and this is super random, so forgive me, Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins had the exact same fantasy output on the play, and if, at least in Yahoo, because somebody sent me that on Twitter that they both had like 8.77 points, which is pretty disappointing fantasy wise. But
yeah, that's pretty bad.
But
yeah.
Totally irrelevant to our preview for this week. So to me, the Cowboys want to run the ball. That suits up very well against the Redskins, who gave up 150 yards on the ground to D'Angelo Williams on Monday night. But defensively, where's the Cowboys' strength? The Redskins are going to come in here, and I think they're going to try to set up the run, try to commit to the run more than they did against Pittsburgh. And I'm curious if you think the Cowboys will deploy the all-zone pass defense that the Steelers went with against Kirk Cousins, Deshaun Jackson, and crew.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys, the interesting about their defense is there's no real strength to it. There's nothing you can say where, like, oh, the front four are dominant, or they got really great cover guys. You know, and they've only got, you know, one linebacker, Sean Lee, who's really, you know, somebody to write home about. So they don't really have a strength in terms of what they do, but they do manage to keep scoring down. And they even did this last year when the team was really bad. They still managed to clamp down in the red zone. Now, they didn't do that against the Giants. The Giants went 3-for-3 on touchdowns in the red zone. So that was an issue. But they're definitely a bend-don't-break type defense, and they're looking to generate turnovers any way they can. So I think that, you know, you're not going to see an aggressive, we're going to come after you and try to blitz you or get, you know, send a lot of people, play cover zero, things like that. That's not going to happen. The Cowboys will sit back. They will let you make some yards, and they're going to hope you're going to make a mistake along the way.
All right. That'll be interesting to see, because I think the Redskins are going to look much different than they did Monday night. I think Sunday will be a fun Skins-Cowboys game. I know that FedEx Field will be packed. I know there will be plenty of folks that will have stars on their clothing. Let me ask you something. This is a different question. Did your heart just sink when you heard the Tony Romo news in August?
Well, it was really tough. I mean, we had really kind of renewed the hope in the offseason.
I mean, hope is always high in Dallas, I feel like.
Yeah, but the way that, you know, things were being talked about, like, you know, the surgery on the collarbone was not an issue. You know, wasn't going to be a problem going forward. He's really strengthened his back. You know, he's not having as much issue as he had before with that. He looked really good in practices. He was throwing the ball with velocity. I mean, just everything came positive, positive, positive. So to have it happen so quickly and so abruptly like that, yeah, it was just really hard to take as a Cowboys fan, because you were kind of hoping that, hey, maybe this is the year, you know, something big could happen, and then bam, taken away like that. Tough, tough break.
You think he's got to hang it up?
I think that he's got to my opinion, he's got to come back this year and prove that he can make it for the rest of the season healthy. And yeah. then they could talk about it. If he cannot make it again sometime during this year with another injury, then I think you got to really talk about hanging him up.
Yeah.
But if he can come in week, I don't know, five, six or something, play the rest of the year and stay healthy and look effective doing it, then I think he can stick around. But, you know, if he cannot stay healthy this year, they got to really think about hanging that up.
I don't know, man. I mean, when you're talking about your collarbone, that's one thing. You're talking about your spine, that's the rest of your life. I don't know. You know, at what point is the health of your life not more important than trying to chase that Super Bowl dream? And that's not a question for me to debate. I'm not chasing any Super Bowl dreams. Dave, I really appreciate you coming on with us. Tell the folks where they can find your stuff, Twitter, Facebook, website, all that stuff.
It's always Blogging the Boys. We're at bloggingtheboys.com. We're at Blogging the Boys. And we're, you know, Facebook, also Blogging the Boys. So that's all you got to remember. We're in all three places.
All right. How about them Cowboys? Dave, thank you very much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. All right. That is it. Redskins Talk the Podcast Week 2 is in the books. Again, if you've made it 40 minutes listening to me and the folks I've been talking to, I owe you a beer. Big thanks to Rich Tandler, as always. Grant Paulson joined us. That's a big get for us. We appreciate it. And Dave Halpern from Blogging the Boys, we appreciate your time. We also appreciate your time for listening. Hit me up on Twitter at JPFinleyCSN, Facebook.com/JPFinleyCSN, CSNMidAtlantic.com. And I had a dude stop me in a parking garage. Do that, too. If you see me, say what's up. Thanks very much.
Horsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Horsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Horsman story.
Horsman Ford Lincoln. Let's ride together.